Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. April 15th, Tax Day, is not that far away, and this year the date comes with added anxiety. It's the first filing season where the new tax law is fully in effect. And while it'll take some time to assess the overall impact on individual taxpayers, what's clear right now is that many Americans still have many questions, especially about popular tax deductions and credits, from mortgages to kids to charitable donations. So today in The Exchange, what to expect when you file your taxes this year? Let's hear from you. What have you noticed so far? Has the new tax law padded your pockets or emptied your wallet? What changes concern you? What changes do you like? What changes do you just not understand? Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Kerry Gladstone. He's the Senior Director of Asset Building Strategies at Granite United Way and Chair of the CASH Coalition of New Hampshire, which stands for Creating Assets, Savings, and Hope. And Kerry, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Laura. Good to be back with you.
Also joining us, Bill Beauchesne, an accountant for Nathan Wexler. He specializes in real estate, LLCs, and wealth management. And Bill, welcome back to you, too. Thank you for your time.
Good morning.
And also with us from New York, Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and author of the book, The Dumb Things Smart People Do with Their Money. And Jill, I hope you're going to tell me some of the dumb things that I'm doing this morning. So thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Jill, to you first, but everybody, one of the most common complaints that Americans have about filing taxes isn't even about paying them. It's that it's too complicated. And Jill, what do you think? How much does this new law make it less complicated?
It's not exactly a postcard. So don't get your hope.
That was the dream, right?
Yeah, that was like, postcard filing. You know, there are a lot of nuances. I think, though, because the new tax law nearly doubled the standard deduction, that many of the millions of Americans who had previously itemized their deductions will now claim the standard deduction. And that does make tax filing a bit easier. So that means, according to the Tax Policy Center, they were expecting about 90% of all U.S. households would actually file using the standard deduction. But you still got to do it. And I think that that may be the biggest complaint, which is, you know, the rolling of the eyeballs, the snorting, the complaining, and the harumphing. I hear it. I hear it right now. You got to get your stuff out, and you have to walk through the process. And the process is certainly easier if you claim the standard deduction, but it's still a process, and you still have to do it. So it's going to take some time. It's not the worst thing in the world, and you feel so virtuous once you've done it. It's really fabulous.
Well, especially if you get a refund, which we'll talk about later. So you said 90% of Americans, Jill, will just file taking that standard deduction and not messing around with other smaller deductions.
Right. I mean, and that standard deduction, which is $12,000 for individuals, $24,000 married filing jointly, $18,000 if you're a head of household, that essentially means that instead of trying to look at all the different that you might have, maybe it's mortgage interest, and maybe there are some other preference items for you guys in New Hampshire. There is no state income tax, so you wouldn't be deducting that. But, you know, there are local taxes that you would be counting if you were trying to itemize, or charitable deductions. If you're claiming the standard, it's just you take this amount and you keep moving through the process. And obviously, for most taxpayers, you are using some sort of software to help you through the process, whether it's the IRS free or some paid software, and you will just methodically work your way through and you will actually be able to finish this process. I don't think it's going to take you as long as you think. It's just the organizing before, I think, that really does freak people out.
Well, Carrie, here's the most basic question. What is the standard deduction?
It's an amount that you're allowed to take off the top, that the IRS says, we'll give you this much tax-free.
I see.
So, and you would think, and I'll say that this really becomes a lesson in tax as a second language, because standard sounds like one amount. But as Jill described, there are three different filing statuses affected by the standard deduction, and that's not counting people who are 65 or older or blind, where there's an additional amount added to the so-called standard deduction. But it's good to know that depending on your filing status, which sounds a lot like marital status, but is not exactly, that anyone who qualifies to file a tax return is allowed to take a certain amount off the top. And it also means that if your income is below that filing, that standard amount, you're not required to file a tax return. And I'll put an asterisk to that. There are a couple of caveats.
There's always asterisks.
Exactly.
Yes.
For someone, for example, who's got self-employment income, even a very small amount for a part-time gig that they had on the side, if they had at least $400 in income, they are still required to file a tax return because the IRS has something called the self-employment tax. And we can talk a little bit more about that. But it's, kind of that counter to the American dream, but it does mean that there's still a filing requirement.
So the standard deduction, Carrie, is basically the government says, hey, Americans, we know it costs money to live. So if you make $50,000, we're going to lop off $12,000 from that, just recognizing, that's tax-free.
Yes. But what has not been given a lot of attention, if folks haven't filed yet, they may be in for a rude awakening. They may have heard about this increase in the standard deduction, but what they may not have heard is that there's something called the personal and dependency exemption, basically claiming an additional deduction for yourself, your spouse if filing jointly, and your kids. That was reduced to zero. So you can no longer claim a deduction for your children.
Wait a minute. The child deduction has gone away?
It has been reduced to zero. It has not gone away in the most technical aspect. The definition of a dependent still exists and comes into play in things like education tax credits for folks who have a child in college or the earned income tax credit, which is a very strong benefit for working families who don't make a lot of money. But the amount that they can claim for that deduction has been reduced to zero.
Bill, the first question I asked Jill, I'd love to throw to you, too. Again, one of the biggest complaints that people have is, oh, it's complicated, and people put it off, and as Jill said, roll their eyes and gnash their teeth. Does this new law make doing your taxes a little bit easier?
Well, I think I agree with Jill's comments wholeheartedly that the standard deduction has made it so that a lot of people who used to itemize may not necessarily itemize anymore, and that may be a good thing or a bad thing. A lot of folks who may live in states that have a high tax rate who have paid in a lot in state income tax and some real estate tax, the new standard deduction, as Jill mentioned, $12,000 single, $24,000 for married filing joint, but the tax deduction on the itemized deductions has been limited to $10,000. If you pay $50,000 in state taxes, you're only going to get a maximum benefit of $10,000. So even some of our clients who, might have had a lot of high itemized deductions for taxes, mortgage interest, charitable contributions, things like that, we're finding that a lot of folks who used to itemize, fairly easily aren't even going to be itemizing this year just because some of these items aren't going to rise to a level that exceeds the $24,000 or the $12,000.
What does itemizing mean exactly? If I'd never done this tax thing before, and I have, what does itemizing mean?
Yeah, so if you have, there's the standard deduction, which is the $12,000 or the $24,000 for single married filing joint or $18,000 for head of household. If you have an opportunity to deduct certain items from your taxes, and if those items exceed that standard deduction amount, then you can take the higher amount, which is the itemized deduction piece.
I see.
And there's a few components that make that up. One is the deduction for taxes, that's state and local taxes. That could be a state income tax. It could be real estate tax, personal property taxes paid on things like vehicles, boats, whatever you might have. Then there's also the mortgage interest deduction, which has changed through tax reform. There's also the charitable contributions, which that's stayed pretty regular. There is one change in there, but it's not a major change for most people. It used to be an opportunity to deduct miscellaneous itemized deductions, which was a hodgepodge of unreimbursed employee expenses, tax preparation fees, investment management fees, things like that, subject to certain limitations, and that's just completely gone. Tax reform eliminated those deductions. And then there's one more, which is the deduction for medical expenses, which you can usually get a deduction if your medical expenses exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. You get a deduction for the amount over that 7.5%.
So the philosophy, Bill, is there used to be all these, you know, nip and tuck kind of itemized deductions, medical expenses, you know, moving expenses and so forth. With this tax overhaul, the government basically said, look, we're going to get rid of a lot of that stuff. It's confusing. Maybe people cheat. But we're going to give you, America, a big, fat standard deduction to kind of make up for the loss of all that. Is that the kind of guiding philosophy, Bill, behind this?
Pretty much. You know, but as was mentioned, you know, the larger itemized or, excuse me, standard deduction, there is the loss of the personal exemption. So in some cases, you know, even with the old standard deduction, the standard deduction plus the deduction for exemptions, you could get to a pretty high level of deductions. Or if you itemized, you also may have gotten your personal exemptions on top of that too. So now with the loss of the exemptions, it's kind of like the whole tax reform in general. Some people are going to come out winners, some people are going to come out losers, and some nothing's really changed.
Well, and Carrie, that used to be the complaint, right? That the winners under the tax system previously were people who could afford an excellent CPA or someone else to help them find all these little itemized deductions, whereas your average Joe or Jane couldn't, and so they didn't benefit under the old system.
And that's why Granite United Way got into the tax business. So we're not an accounting firm. We're a nonprofit organization. I'm not an accountant. And the strength of the VITA program, Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, is that it allows people from all walks of life who are at least knowledgeable about the tax code generally, they're not afraid of it, they've got a computer logic and a math logic, can go through a certification process prescribed by the IRS and be an IRS-certified volunteer and learn about the standard deduction and what that consists of. Learn about the earned income tax credit and other tax credits that people can claim as a way of getting kind of a gift card to pay their tax bill. And then link to other resources for building assets, whether it's savings when they prepare their taxes or something longer term like first-time home ownership or the college fund for the kids. And all of this comes at a cost of zero, because it is funded in part by the IRS, and we have at Granite United Way generous support from Citizens Bank and some other partners that allow us to do this free of charge for anyone with an income up to $66,000. And there's also a self-filing platform for that. We use the same dollar scale, which according to what we've heard nationally, about 70%, about 7 in 10 residents can file their taxes free of charge with that income scale.
Our number here in the exchange for you to join us as we look at the impact of the new tax law on Granite State taxpayers filing, getting ready to file, or who have already filed. We'd love to hear from you, too. The number here is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can always respond on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. I want to hear from everybody on this, but Carrie, you first. What are one or two questions that you keep hearing from the people that you help over and over and over again?
One of the questions that's come up, especially since this first tax season under the new tax law started, is why is my refund different than it was? And particularly, it's smaller. And that's because a lot of people don't understand the refund is not really the bottom line. The tax bill is the bottom line. So for many people, they had a smaller tax bill, and they may be working for someone else. Their employers were instructed to change the withholding tables. So withholding is the amount of money people have taken out of their paycheck, kind of a payment plan throughout the year for their taxes.
Gotcha. I'm glad you answered that, by the way, because I just helped my 19-year-old son file his taxes for the first time. He said, what's a withholding? And I was like, well, I sort of know what it is, but I'm not really good at explaining it. So, yeah, go ahead.
I tell folks who go shopping, it's like paying your taxes on layaway.
Sure.
So you put down a certain amount throughout the course of the year, and then at the end of the year, this is how much the tax bill costs. And so many employers, using the same withholding that was in effect, changed the amount withheld. So let's say you had $10 more per paycheck in each week, and you may or may not have even noticed that. Well, over the course of a year, that's $500 more.
And that you notice.
Right. Especially when your tax refund is $500 smaller the following year. So that's an oversimplification. There are other pieces that come into play, but that's why your refund may be smaller this year.
Well, and Jill, that's a theme that I have heard about a lot with this tax bill. A lot of people are saying, whoa, what happened to that nice refund check? I was going to, get a new pair of shoes with that. What are you hearing about the refund this year?
Well, first of all, the first couple of weeks were completely crazed because the early filers were saying, oh my God, I got less money, and they freaked out and they thought that instead of getting any sort of tax help throughout the year, that they now were somehow losers. And there are two problems with this. Number one is the early data were misleading because after 3 weeks, it looks like refunds and the IRS data will get updated again the end of this week. But after 3 weeks, we now know it's running exactly where we were a year ago. But the real issue that I thought was interesting is that so many people did not realize that they made a little bit more money throughout last year because of those changes in the withholding tables. And I think this may have something to do with direct deposit, that I don't really look at my pay stub very often. And so then they were not realizing that part of the change in the tax code meant that they were taking home more money throughout 2018. And as a result, when they went to file early on, they maybe did not get as big a refund as last year, but that didn't matter. They still got a tax cut. So there's two issues: tax cut versus withholding and refunds or owing the IRS money. And I think that this is actually almost like a civics lesson. It's a tax lesson. You learn that withholding too much money means you owe money. You will not owe money. You will get a refund. And withholding too little means you owe money. So it's not about the tax cut itself. It's how much you are actually sending to Uncle Sam out of your pay. And that's different than what is your overall tax position this year vis-a-vis last year.
Well, and Jill, all the analysts and experts that I came across preparing for the show said, look, folks, it's not about the refund. It's about making sure that you're not overpaying or underpaying. But still, Jill, getting to your book, The Dumb Things Smart People Do With Their Money, it is kind of about the refund for some people. They can't wait to get that nice check and do something fun with it.
Right. If you're going to do something fun with it, then I'm really not psyched about you getting that refund.
Come on, Jill.
because realistically, if you got a refund and you are doing everything you need to do in your financial life, you want to go blow your refund on something fun, like go out and get yourself five pairs of sneaks, great. But if you are somebody who has some overhang, maybe student loan debt, maybe you've got some credit card debt, maybe you don't have a big enough emergency reserve fund, maybe you don't contribute enough to your retirement account, then those are some ideas for what to do with your refund. And I think the problem is that when you get that refund, it is quite tantalizing to spend it on something you don't need. But it is far better and probably smarter for you that throughout the year, if you say, hey, the average tax refund right now running around $3,000. The smarter thing to do is like, okay, well, wait a second. I don't want to get $3,000 back next year. So what can I do with that $3,000 throughout the year to improve my financial condition? Can I put some extra money down on that outstanding debt? Can I automatically have money that comes into my checking account, then go to my savings account? Well, hey, do that or nudge up those retirement contributions.
All right. Coming up, we will talk a lot more detail about the new tax law, how it might affect you. We'll look again at those child tax deductions, talk a little bit with Bill Beauchesne about business taxes, and then some questions about if you need time to file an extension. Also, how to choose a tax preparer if you're feeling that you can't manage it on your own. And we'll really start taking your questions and comments. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back.
Civics 101 has done hundreds of shows about how the government works.
But we realized that we missed a step, something bigger.
All right, step right up, gentlemen. Don't miss your chance to commit treason.
Our nation, our government, is all built on paper and ink.
That's why we made a six-part series on the founding documents, the pieces of paper that make us us, or rather, we. Subscribe or listen online at civics101podcast.org. Civics 101 is a production of NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the first tax season under the new tax law. This is the first filing period that the law is in full effect. We're asking what major changes were made, and we're hearing from you. What questions do you have about what this tax overhaul might mean for you, especially if you haven't filed yet? We'd love to hear from you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can always respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. With me in studio, Carrie Gladstone, Senior Director of Asset Building Strategies at Granite United Way. Joining us from New York, Jill Schlesinger, CBS Business News Analyst, author of the book, The Dumb Things Smart People Do With Their Money. And also joining us from New Hampshire, Bill Beauchesne. He's an accountant for Nathan Wexler, who specializes in real estate, LLCs, and wealth management. I got a couple questions about businesses for you, Bill. But first, Carrie, just to follow up on something that Jill said just before the break, it's not about the refund, even though a lot of people are opening up their refund checks and going, that's not as big and fun as it was last year. So I'd love your thoughts, too, on it's not about the refund.
Well, for folks who are getting a refund, which is most filers, about 75% are getting some money back.
Oh, really?
And
wow.
Yeah. So it may be a little bit, and that's the ideal. You want just enough to come back to have the rest of it cover your tax bill. But for folks who claim, for example, the earned income tax credit, which has a maximum of more than $6,000, there's suddenly a windfall. And to be able to take advantage of something that's in the tax code for everyone, if you are getting a refund, you can allocate that by direct deposit into up to three different accounts. So New Hampshire is fortunate. We have one of the lowest rates of people without a bank account at all. Only about 3% of our residents are unbanked. But for many people, they are underbanked, meaning they have a checking and savings account, but they have very little in savings. Well, here's an opportunity. You're getting a significant refund. Why don't you split off a portion of that into a savings account? You can also buy a U.S. savings bond with a portion of your refund with as little as $50. So an organization called Commonwealth, based in Boston, did some remarkable research about this, and I won't get into it now, but they actually realized that people are really excited not only about the opportunity to do that, but the opportunity to have some incentives. It's called prize-linked savings. So they and another organization called America Saves got together, they raised some money and created the Save Your Refund promotion. So anyone in the country who is getting a refund can allocate at least $50 into a savings vehicle of some kind, whether a regular savings account, a college savings plan, the retirement fund that Jill talked about.
So it's like a reminder, an opportunity, and they can get into this.
And then they can be eligible for cash prizes throughout tax season.
Oh.
Random $100 drawings. And at the end of tax season, here's the fun part. We'll put the fun in refund by saying you can be a $10,000 grand prize winner. And New Hampshire had two grand prize winners who both came to our volunteer income tax assistance sites, one at the River Center in Peterborough and one that Granite United Way operates in Laconia.
Wow. You guys are serious about this.
Yes.
Okay. Well, speaking of New Hampshire, Bill, I wanted to ask you about your business clients here in this state. Now, mostly this hour, we're focusing on, you know, the individual person sitting down, trying to work through this on their own for themselves and their family. But what about New Hampshire businesses, especially our small businesses? What questions do you get from them, Bill, about this new tax law?
Well, the tax law is one of the most sweeping changes since 1986 when the code was overhauled the last time. And a lot of those changes came on the business side. And, you know, we as a profession have spent really the last year plus digesting these new laws and what it means and trying to do planning for all of our clients around these new laws. And most of the questions typically are, well, what does it mean for me? You know, what can I take advantage of out of this new tax law? Because it's on the business side, it's very taxpayer friendly. There's a lot of new deductions available in terms of depreciation, you know, capital assets that are purchased, hard assets, buildings and equipment, vehicles, things like that. used in a trade or business where you're allowed to depreciate those over time. And now with the new tax reform, the acceleration of those deductions is truly amazing. In some cases, or in a lot of cases, you can write off a lot of those things immediately as soon as they're purchased and placed in the service, which is a little bit of a departure of prior law, which was nice too, where you got to write off quite a bit. But now we're in an environment where we can write off a lot of things that typically you had to write off just a little bit over time. That's one of the bigger things. On the corporate side, you know, the tax rate was dropped to a flat 21%, which was a big decrease on that end. You know, in the state of New Hampshire, we don't see a lot of corporations like that. You know, typically most of our small businesses in New Hampshire are organized as LLCs, partnerships, or S corporations. So they deal with a flow through, meaning that the business doesn't typically pay the tax. It's the owners who end up paying the tax on behalf of the business. And with that came a huge deduction, a 20%, we call it qualified business income deduction. a lot of folks refer to it as the 199A, which is the code section that it references. But this deduction essentially allows certain businesses to take 20% of their qualified business income and take a deduction on their tax return for 20% of their qualified business income. Which
sounds like a lot.
It's a huge benefit for a lot of folks. There is, of course, as with anything, an incredible amount of laws and rules behind it. Final regulations were actually just issued just a few weeks ago on this, because we as accountants and the attorneys out there, we pick through these laws and try to see what it is we're trying to deal with so that we can plan around it. And so we finally have some final regs to give us some guidance on it. But you know, those are kind of two of the huge things that I've been seeing a lot of our clients taking advantage of.
Well, and Bill, speaking of tax season, and you are a CPA, so I know you have to go. But one last question before you do, please.
Sure.
Here's an email that came in from Tom in Rye. And this relates to the fact that, as someone mentioned earlier, high income tax states and high property tax states like New York, like California, those folks won't benefit from that state and local tax deduction anymore like they used to. So that's the basis of Tom from Rye's question. He says, would your guests care to remark on any demographic or migration changes that might occur as a result of the 2017 tax bill? Tom says, we represent clients all around the country and some in high tax states like California, Illinois, and New York, that are actively looking to change their state of residency due to the change in deductibility of state and local taxes. Might a tax-friendly state like New Hampshire benefit from this migration? And Bill, I'd just love to throw that to you.
Sure. You know, it's kind of a similar type of situation when dealing with my clients who, you know, get upset maybe over a particular tax rule or tax law. At the end of the day, you know, you have to do what's right for you as an individual, your employees, your company. You know, you can't really let tax laws determine, you know, what's economically best for you as a person and as a company. So perhaps that's taken in as one consideration of where you want to do business, certainly, and you want to be business friendly with your tax laws. So sure, you know, somebody who's maybe operating in New York, maybe a place like New Hampshire might look a little bit more attractive. But I don't think that the loss of a Schedule A itemized deduction for taxes paid would be the primary leading factor of wanting to leave a particular location.
There's a lot more that goes into it than just that.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a factor, and you know, it's not a certainly not a pro. It's definitely a con when weighing your options, but I don't necessarily would see that as a primary driving factor.
All right. Bill, we know you need to go. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's Bill Beauchesne, accountant for Nathan Wexler, who specializes in real estate, LLCs, and wealth management. And Jill and Carrie, let's go to our listeners now. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Lots of emails coming in, including that one from Tom and Rye. Tom, thank you for that. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. And Marilyn's calling from Concord. Hi, Marilyn. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hello there.
Go ahead, Marilyn.
I'm concerned about a fee that I was charged because I was late filing. Now, my understanding has always been that taxes were due by April 15 of whatever calendar year it was.
Who charged you that fee, Marilyn, and when did that happen?
Within the past week. I filed through TurboTax, and apparently I had not had enough withholding during the course of the year so that I was going to have to pay something. Okay, fine. I'm perfectly willing to do that. But I don't like being charged a fee because I have to pay something extra, and it's way before April 15th.
Okay, interesting. Marilyn, thank you for the call. Go ahead, Carrie.
Well, I'm wondering, Marilyn, if the amount that you had to pay in was more than $1,000, because the IRS does charge a fee if you have too much to pay in.
Now, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, now, if you're getting more than $1,000 as a refund, they don't give you a bonus. But if you're holding on to too much of their money, they want that, and they want to make sure that it's not too much.
Okay, that's one of those unhappy surprises. Marilyn, thank you very much for the call. Let's take Jim in Manchester. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. I have filed my taxes, and I'm surprised that I haven't heard too much from people who are either on Social Security or on a pension. My issue is with Social Security. For the past 5-6 years, I have always received a refund anywhere from $3,800 to $4,900 every single year until this year. Last year, my refund was $3,903. This year, my refund is $1,617. I checked with the people who did my tax work. I contacted them. They put me with a CPA, and what I found out is in the year 2017, in the formula that's used for figuring if you owe any tax on Social Security, there was an exemption. This year, that exemption has been taken away. And so that when I filed this year, and when they went through the formula of it, it suddenly reduced the amount of refund I was going to get to $1,617.
Wow, that's a big difference. And that's another, Jill, I'll throw this to you, another one of those unhappy surprises with this tax bill. What do you think?
I don't know anything about this, so I'm not the tax expert. I don't go that deep into this. So obviously, I will defer to the tax expert with you.
Yeah, Carrie, Social Security especially, people who didn't get the benefit that they thought that they would get, that they got all the time over many years.
Yeah, without looking at Jim's tax return, I can't tell because there are several different pieces. But he mentioned that exemption. So if that personal exemption is something he had claimed in the past, which was $4,050 last year, and twice that amount if it's a married couple filing jointly, and if they have dependents to claim, whether it's someone who's of working age, retirement, but they may have a child, an adult child, who is permanently and totally disabled and were able to claim that dependent. So a family of five, for example, would have lost the personal and dependency exemptions totaling more than $20,000. Which will more than offset that increase in the standard deduction.
Wow. All right. Well, Jim, I'm sorry to hear about what happened to you. It's always unpleasant when you're used to getting a big check and then it's not so big. You know, both of our callers, Jill, have mentioned getting tax help, finding help from a CPA. Do you hear, Jill, that more people these days are using a CPA, or more people using tax prep software like TurboTax, or more people just sitting down with pen and paper, especially since this new system is supposed to be simpler? What are you hearing, Jill?
Far fewer people are using pen and paper.
Far fewer,
because it's just not as efficient. And actually, the error rate on paper returns exceeds that of any electronic return. So also, by the way, a lot of people don't use electronic. The ones who are clinging to paper are worried about security, right? Some ID theft, et cetera. And the ID theft rates on paper returns are just as high as electronic returns. So it doesn't really make a difference. So really, electronic is better. It's more efficient. That said, I think that when you have a complicated tax year, then turning to a tax professional can be extraordinarily helpful. So maybe you sold a business, a piece of real estate, and that's something that's very different than what you've experienced in the past. I think that there are folks who really could benefit from talking to a professional who will walk you through it. There are I would say that the lion's share of the people that I hear from on my radio show, on my podcast, are folks who are doing it through software. And, you know, honestly, these tax software platforms are quite good. And if you feel like just this year was such an outlier and it was a crazy year and you don't want to deal with a new tax code yourself, or you're flummoxed after you've spent the money, sure, go talk to somebody. But I would also caution you, don't wait too long, because to find a tax preparer as you get deeper into March and into early April, you are going to come up short. So I think it's a great idea. I use a tax professional because I don't want to do it myself. I'm basically lazy. So I put it all together and I look through my whole organizer and I get all my documents and I pop it off to the CPA and he takes care of it. It's great. But I think that for a lot of people, you may be surprised that you can walk yourself through software, and it's not that hard. Again, you've got to have all the documentation, so be prepared. Before you sit down to start doing it, don't have your, you know, your W-2 in one place and this piece of information and your property tax return in the other place. Just try to get all of your information and you'll walk through it. It will not be that bad.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, we found that we were booking the show. We were calling CPAs and accountants and so forth and tax preparers. And a lot of people said, I'm pretty busy in March. So we really appreciate Bill joining us earlier and you being here, Carrie. You know, you talked about using a tax preparer, especially if you're feeling flummoxed, as you said, Jill, by a particular financial situation or by the new tax bill. The IRS has a dozen or so public information spots on its website, and one of them talks about finding a tax preparer. Let's hear just a little bit from the IRS on that.
What kind of help does the IRS have for identity theft victims?
If you suspect you're a victim of tax-related identity theft, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn how to prevent potential refund fraud and protect your tax account. At the IRS, combating tax-related identity theft is a top priority, and we are committed to prevention, detection, and assisting victims. And we're working with law enforcement to catch the criminals. For more info, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn what the IRS is doing to help protect you.
So that's another issue, identity theft, in addition to picking the right kind of accountant, including one that won't end up cheating you. Go ahead, Carrie.
It is certainly an issue. And at our volunteer income tax assistance sites, as well as the sites that our partner in free tax preparation in New Hampshire, AARP, through their tax aid program, we are trained to address that issue, because the worst moment is when someone has their tax return electronically filed and rejected because this Social Security number was used on another return.
Oh, dear.
So that's a way of catching ID theft. We can actually take an affidavit from the taxpayer and help them guide them through getting their taxes done, but at the same time, give them some other resources so they can undo some of the other factors that come into play. The bottom line is what, you know, Jill was saying, it does get complicated. More than 6 in 10 New Hampshire residents prepare their own taxes.
Oh, really?
So
using TurboTax or
yes,
another software platform?
Well, yeah. So, and we don't know if they're paying for that software, and we don't know if it's accurate. So for self-filers, we recommend My Free Taxes, which is free of charge with an income up to $66,000 and has a robust assistance, frequently asked questions section that can guide people through that. But our community-based sites, Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, and I mentioned AARP, those folks are IRS certified. There is no reason for most folks to pay a dime. So they can go to nhtaxhelp.org or myfreetaxes.com and find out about getting their taxes done for free.
Okay, a lot of help online. Maybe after a break, though, I'd like to ask both of you, you know, some folks in New Hampshire still do not have great internet access. Some folks are not digital natives and will have a hard time navigating IRS.gov or whatever. Some of these websites are not brilliant. So we'll talk about that coming back and also take a lot more of your questions. So keep them coming in. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
Time is running out for you to help shorten NHPR's March Fund Drive, while also getting entered into a drawing to win an incredible trip to Anchorage, Alaska, where you can soar above glaciers, stay up late to see the northern lights or the midnight sun,
You'll also be entered to win our grand prize, a trip for two to Honolulu, Hawaii, courtesy of Milne Travel American Express. Don't wait. Give now to support the news you trust and the NHPR programs you love at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, how do you feel about town meetings these days? What's the role of town meeting in modern New Hampshire society? Let us know. Send us an email before the show to exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. This hour, we're looking at the new tax law and what it might mean for you. It's the first filing season that this tax code overhaul has been in full effect. And we're taking your questions. You've got lots of them. Keep them coming in. That's great. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. And Jill, another question for you. We got two calls, before the break, both from people who'd filed their taxes and were not happy with the result. Who is going to be happy with the result when they file this year?
You know, there are going to be a lot of people because, you know, when the Treasury was projecting the impact of the tax cut, they estimated that nearly 70% of tax filers would actually save money in taxes based on the new code. The question is, if you realize, whether you realize this or not, right? Because it's not about the refund. So who might be happy is somebody who, let's say, fell there. Maybe they claimed that standard deduction. Maybe they didn't have too many exemptions that they lost. And maybe they found that their tax bracket was actually lower. This could be the kind of person who realizes, hey, I did pretty well. And, you know, again, there are a lot of people who live in high tax states. I'm from New York, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. People are freaking out. But many of the people I spoke to who were previously freaking out said, I was kind of freaked out about the state and local tax deduction and losing part of that or having it capped. But I found that my bracket went down so dramatically that I actually did better this year than last. So I think there are a lot of people who are going to just have to go through the process and see where they stand. But again, don't judge the tax cut based on your refund amount. Judge it by looking at your total tax paid this year, and you can compare it to last year. You know, the only caveat is, if you've had a different tax situation, if you made way more money or made less money, that could be a problem. The other group that I think is probably going to be pretty happy, and talked a little bit about small businesses, would be those businesses that are going to see a massive reduction in their taxes because they are pass-through entities, meaning that the money comes through their company and then basically got taxed at their level. But instead of paying an ordinary tax bracket, they're capped at a much lower rate. So I think that some small business owners are going to be very happy this tax season.
Well, here's a question from Jerry, who says, what options or services are available to the taxpayer for tax planning for the upcoming tax year? And that's right up your alley, Carrie. Go ahead.
Well, that's one of the things we try to do at our volunteer income tax assistance sites, is to take a look at the tax return that was just completed and help people understand it. And there is a very useful tool at the IRS website, irs.gov, called the Withholding Calculator. And it's more extensive than simply the W-4, which, you know, people are asking me, should I put down one? Should I put down two? My friend said I should put down zero. What should I do? And I need more information. So the Withholding Calculator, irs.gov, and type Withholding Calculator in the search box, goes through five screens that asks, how many jobs are there in the household? How many credits do you get? You pay someone to take care of your child while you're at work, so the child and dependent care credit may come into play, and some other factors. And then compare that to your most recent pay stub. And the fifth screen will say, based on what you've told us, this is how much you can expect to pay in taxes this year. And at your current withholding, this is how much you may be getting back. You can make a more educated adjustment to that W-4 if you want to have more taken out so that you're not forced to pay in, or that if you are getting a large amount back, you can make the choice of saying, I want to have more in my paycheck throughout the year. And this is the thing that people were upset about. Not that they were getting more in their paycheck, but that they may not have realized it. Mm-hmm. So if they can be more intentional about that, they can, as Jill talked about, spend the rest of the year keeping up with bills, maybe putting some money into savings so that they're not in that situation next year and they have more control over their finances.
And how helpful do you think, Jill, these online tools that Carrie just mentioned are for, well, the average person and then certain subsets of the population that, you know, don't have great internet access, you know, maybe don't have access or don't have the understanding of how to navigate some of these sites? I wonder what you think.
Well, first of all, I think that the very best use of your tax dollars is probably seen in the IRS.gov website. I find it fantastic. I really do. I think there's a great amount of information and the resources. And I've been pointing people towards that withholding calculator and people who maybe not be as savvy. It's a very easy step-by-step process. Now, that said, you know, as Carrie said, that there are these organizations in the VITA program being one, tax counseling for the elderly, where you can have somebody walk you through this. I think that the people who are spooked by the idea should then perhaps find themselves someone who is maybe a friend or maybe a relative who they can walk through some of the information with and really try to get a better handle. Look, I think the big problem when it comes to this tax year is that there are obviously surprises, and nobody likes a financial surprise. Very rarely do we get like, oh, I'm so bummed out about my upside financial surprise. It's usually a downside one, right? So I think that what's important here is that, you know, I know that you can get spooked, but, you know, right, if you just literally go to any web browser and go to IRS.gov and you can really see all of the information, and these are click buttons, I think that you might, maybe we are overestimating this. I don't know if we're getting complaints from people who say, I don't know how to use the IRS website, but I mean, if my mom can use it, which I made her do, by the way, then I got the sense that, you know, if she can get through that withholding calculator and she can look at this, it's really a question of, can you coach somebody along to do it? Because I really don't think it's worth it for us to be, you know, sort of providing advice to the not the advice, but like I don't want people to be dissuaded. It's not that hard. So I feel like we should be encouraging as many people as possible to do it.
Go ahead, Carrie.
And of course, there are computers available at public libraries.
Absolutely.
And librarians really want to help. I mean, I think of Amy Hamner at the Manchester Public Library in the largest city in our state. Calls me and says, do you have some of those tax materials we can put up to promote My Free Taxes and the VITA and other resources that can help people not only at tax time but learn about this, how they can get some of that assistance throughout the year.
Would somebody maybe feel nervous about doing their taxes at a library, Carrie, given, you know, identity theft concerns and so forth?
Well, and that's why you know, make sure you're looking to see My Free Taxes. At the top of the page, it does say HTTPS for security.
Mm.
And the folks who are inclined to go to someone to get their taxes done, you know, we would say call 211 or go to nhtaxhelp.org, where they can find out the location and times of operation for about 60 free of charge sites throughout New Hampshire, and
in many cases
actually make an appointment online or through 211.
And we've got resources on our website as well, nhpr.org/exchange. Lots of questions from our listeners, Jill and Carrie, so let's go back to them. And John is in Hillsboro. Hi, John. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. So sort of lots of things to talk about. I get excited about taxes, if anybody can get excited about taxes.
Us too,
but,
John.
For me, I'm one of the people who like it, the tax cut that I have, the 20% business tax that you cut that you mentioned, deduction. And then the thing I was surprised about was that the standard deduction did overcome my – I itemized taxes every other year with property and charitable donations quite a bit, so I wasn't sure how well that would work for me. And then the part I don't think you've mentioned today is the doubling of the child tax credit. We have six kids, so that's an increase of $6,000 right off the top as a credit. And then we actually can't take advantage of quite all of that because of the additional child tax credit only being $1,400. We actually lost out on a little bit of the I couldn't take the full $2,000 based on my income and whatever. But you know, for me, it's $8,000 or $9,000 cheaper. I'm actually getting a true refund. And that is always frustrating to me. You guys, I keep preaching the it's not about the refund because nobody understands that. But I'm actually getting a real refund this year. It covers all the self-employment taxes and all the income tax and everything.
Well, John, it's good to hear from you. And I really did want to clarify, Carrie, something that you said earlier. So I'm really glad you called, John. We were talking about the child deduction earlier, but that's different from the child credit. Can you clarify, please?
Yes. And first of all, I'd like to talk to John off the air about becoming a tax volunteer because he seems very knowledgeable in that. And it's, you know, that old one of these is not like the others. So we have these deductions and adjustments and the piece that was lost is the personal and dependency exemption. So that's subtracting an amount from your taxable income. Before the tax is calculated. Now, a credit, as I said earlier, it's like getting a gift card to pay your taxes directly.
I see.
So, and here's as much as we want to get into the weeds about this, there are two kinds of credits, essentially, refundable and non-refundable. So if the amount of the tax credit is more than the tax bill, you get the rest back as a cash refund. If the return has a credit that's non-refundable, such as the child and dependent care credit, you get up to the amount of your tax bill, and then the rest of that credit goes away. What John described is a quirk in the child tax credit, which is a credit for everyone who has a child under age 17. That credit went from $1,000 to $2,000.
That's a big difference.
That is a big difference. And however, the amount of the refundable portion, that's one of those quirks, went from $1,000 to $1,400. So without doing the math, what it means that a family with higher income can get a lot more toward their tax bill. So as John mentioned, with five kids, that's a $10,000 tax credit. And the amount of income people can earn and still receive that credit went way up from $110,000 before they lose that credit for a married couple filing jointly to $400,000. So a high-income family got an additional $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $6,000, maybe $10,000 without doing anything different. Now, the earned income tax credit is a credit for lower-income working people and is fully refundable. So people get their tax bill paid if they have one, and then they can get the rest back. There was a change in the way that was calculated so that it slows the rate of growth in the tax credit. And so a family loses between $7 and $13 on that credit, which doesn't sound like a lot until you think about a family making $25,000 a year, which is the average at our volunteer income tax assistance sites. That's 2 to 4 gallons of milk
sure.
in the course of a year's time.
That counts, yeah.
And just one thing that I can pop in there. The one area that people seem to be kind of bummed out about, because you're right, that child credit was nearly doubled, but it's only for your kids who are under the age of 17. So I heard from a lot of people who have college-age kids who said, oh, no, I only got $500 for my 18 and 19-year-old. But, you know, there are some expansions of some of the education credits as well. But, you know, look, every situation, you're going to find winners and losers. That is essentially what the tax code has always been.
Well, I thought I read, Carrie, correct me if I'm wrong, that if your over 17-year-old was a student, they're still eligible for a credit or a deduction as long as they're a student, a college student or a high school student.
Right. So that's why that definition of a dependent is important. It's still in place, and it's for anyone who has a child up to age 24 if they're a full-time college student, or any age if permanently and totally disabled, which is also very important because a lot of folks don't realize that they are able to qualify for this new $500 tax credit. So it's kind of a consolation prize. You don't get the benefit of the increase in the child tax credit, but you do get this $500 gift card.
Well, lots of comments from our listeners, and you know, we're getting close to the end of the hour, so we won't get to all of them, but I want to try and put at least a few more in. Here's one from Bethany on Facebook who says, I found that there are a couple surprises in the new tax laws. I was disappointed to learn that I could no longer claim my home office that I use to work 40 hours a week. Bethany says, I work from home for a large corporation and no longer receive compensation for the utilities utilized during my work hours. Bethany says, why would individuals who choose to telecommute be punished for taking this opportunity? You know, Jill, without commenting on the particulars of Bethany's Facebook comment, it does seem to relate to what we talked about earlier, that with this big change in the standard deduction, a lot of these smaller deductions that people liked got eliminated.
Right. And by the way, maybe we should be happy because of some of those smaller deductions, a few big ones still remain. Because if you go back in time and you learn about some of the negotiations, let us not forget that there were some early proposals that scrapped the mortgage interest deduction. And there were some big issues that were on the table. And obviously, the National Association of Realtors really pushed back against that. But in essence, I think that that deduction that she missed, she may have actually been in a better tax position again because maybe her actual bracket went down. And I think that we seem to be focusing so much on what was missed instead of saying, what happened here? Did I pay more or less in taxes from 17 to 18?
Look at the big picture.
That's right. And I know, like, it's a bummer, right? But, you know, you want to get to putting something on a postcard, then wait until you see what will be on the heap to be scrapped.
Yeah, charitable deductions, mortgage, all that stuff that people love.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, last question for you, Jill. In your book, you say, you know, when it comes to big, important financial decisions, it's so easy to let your heart lead instead of your brain. I love that line. If that's the case, Jill, how does understanding that dynamic help people as they approach the tax filing deadline?
Well, first of all, this idea, you know, it's like taxes kind of remind me of real estate. It's just supercharged with emotions. So, you know, again, I love my tax refund. It's just such a silly position to take when you really consider exactly what Carrie and what Bill was saying, which is like your whole goal of being a taxpayer is to be net neutral. Like, I hope that you got a check for $10 back, like that for your time. That's about it. But the reality is I think that we need to stop focusing on what we don't have and kind of focus on what we do have. You know, I interview experts all the time in tax law, in taxation, and what all of them say is we are at a time where this is the lowest tax rate that most people will pay in a lifetime. So suck it up, everyone. Don't worry. It's going to be okay.
Carrie, how about you? Resources for people who haven't filed yet, if they're thinking, oh my gosh, I got to get started. I don't know what to do.
Self-filers can go to myfreetaxes.com. Anyone looking to get their taxes done for free by IRS certified volunteers can go to nhtaxhelp.org or call 211.
All right. Super easy, at least in terms of getting those resources out there. We'll put the resources on our website as well. If you're driving down the road and can't jot it down, it's nhpr.org/exchange. Jill, it was really great to have you. We'll talk to you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, author of the book, The Dumb Things Smart People Do with Their Money. And Carrie, it was really nice to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Carrie Gladstone, Senior Director of Asset Building Strategies at Granite United Way. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt, Christina Phillips, and Ali Oshinsky. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.